Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360, on April 13th, 2018. Whoa, Friday the 13th. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. This is what we do in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And joining us today as co-host, the president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce, and also producer, Mr. Mark Lips. And of course, with us because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
Mark is doing better than all of us at this point.
I was doing fine until that Friday the 13th comment. Now I've got my head on a swivel. I'm looking around. I'm thinking, what's going on?
It is. It's a great day. What a great day to be in Coachella.
Yeah, so what may happen, now what I'm doing, I'm actually in the Ralph's parking lot. This is what we always do. We meet at the Ralph's parking lot, we provision, and then we head to get into the queue because there will be a lot of cars there to get you into Coachella and to your campsite. I'm in the escape pod, by the way. And so this will be its first trip to Coachella. So I'm waiting for the guys. When they get here, they'll probably run into the store and get some things. I've already done it. And then we'll head out. So I may put you on mute a little bit as I get started. I will endeavor to try to stay on the line and hopefully won't run into any dead spots.
Excellent. Excellent. And you know? Mark, you also have to worry about.
Enough, we might be able to hear the first band.
And Mark, you also have to worry about, there's a lot of, you know, people that go to Coachella and they don't wear a lot of clothes and sometimes they rub up against you. So you've got to be prepared for things like that.
Joe, I think you're confusing Coachella with Burning Man.
No, I was at Coachella and there was a few people from Burning Man there.
Well, next time, put some clothes on.
Okay. I'll try.
Hey, Jackie, did you go to Hermosa's State of the City last night by any chance?
No, I spent almost the entire day at the Coastal Commission hearing in Redondo for the waterfront project. Oh, boy,
yeah.
How fun was that?
How did that go?
It was very contentious. The meeting
really?
Started at 8 or 9, and they go through, you know, they have an agenda, and they had a bunch of other items on their agenda that they had to go through, and they didn't start the public or the comment. They allowed each of the city did their comments, the Coastal Commission did their comments, and then a couple, you know, Fred Bruning got up to speak, and, you know, all the different big players had time to chat, and then they started the public comment. You know, I was there at, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock. I had to leave at noon for a dentist appointment, and then I came back afterwards, and they were just, you know, getting it underway with the public comment period. And, you know, there were several hundred people there.
Kidding. Which way did it feel like it was leaning? First of all, I know how your city council because of Bill Brandt, but how did it, and the city, do they just follow suit with city council, I'm assuming?
There's a little conundrum there because you got to remember it was the city and city council that approved the project to happen before Measure C happened. But a judge recently ruled that Measure C does not apply to this project because the project was fully vested before Measure C, you know, happened. So the city, it's an interesting balance because, you know, there are all these lawsuits now against city and individuals, but it was the city that originally got the project rolling, and now there's new players on the city council that don't want the project. So, Mayor Brand got up to speak, but he spoke as a citizen, not the mayor. it was very interesting. And this was just an informational hearing. They made it very clear they weren't going to make any decisions. They're going to come back in August and make a decision.
Sure.
But it was, I would say it was right down the middle. You know, there were a lot of people there for it, and there were a lot of people there against it. But right at the very beginning, it was interesting. Somebody, a proponent of the project, got up to speak and made some statements, and the anti people just made a ton of noise, like snickering, laughing, catcalling. And the commissioner said, stop that right now, do it again, and you're out. I mean, they were tough. And they had they had over 200 speaker cards. And, you know, they held the pink slips up, the speaker cards, and they said, we got to get through this. You know, otherwise we're going to be here until tomorrow. So it was like you had your 2 minutes and your 2 minutes, boom, that was it. You know, people, you know, a lot of times when the buzzer goes off, people keep talking. They said, nope, sorry, out. And they literally, like, moved them physically off of the podium and got the next person up, you know. It was nutty. It was nutty.
All right.
So anyway, yeah. That's what I spent the day doing, not having as much fun as you, Mark. We may have lost him, though.
We may have. He's too quiet.
You know something? He's still
Mark
on the line, but he's still on the line, but he may have muted us. So let's get going. Let's get on to our show.
Let's get going.
Show.
And Jackie,
right.
You know, we're going to have a discussion about something really critical. I think when you think about local economies, local economies cannot run just on, you know, professional offices and doctor's offices and other kinds of service professionals. Retail is critical to the health of a local economy, and retail is under attack this way and that way and every way. Jackie, I just wish we could have a retail expert on the show.
Well, lucky, yes, we do.
What?
Yes, we do. Our guest this morning is Ken Hira, Executive Vice President for Cosmont Companies. An expert in retail development and strategies for retail attraction, Ken has over 25 years of varied experience in virtually every aspect of real estate financing, downtown revitalization, acquisition, entitlement, development, asset management, and disposition. His expertise is in identifying retail tenants and negotiating retail and mixed-use projects that can revitalize communities and assist in economic development tax generation programs. A former EVP of the Irvine-based mixed-use developer Pacific Century Commercial, Ken managed a portfolio of over 100 million of retail sites while operating the commercial division of the company. Prior to this, as a managing director of acquisitions for West Trust and a vice president of development at Lewis Retail Centers, he evaluated and underwrote hundreds of acres of land, successfully captured and negotiated anchor tenant commitments, creating $60 million of value in ground-up development and redevelopment, and was responsible for 800,000 square feet of retail entitlement, design, and development. As vice president of GMS Realty, he entitled 1 million square feet of retail development projects, as well as led the acquisition of 24 neighborhood and community shopping centers, totaling 3.3 million square feet and valued at $375 million, and organized a $287 million recapitalization. Now, Ken is an active volunteer of the International Council of Shopping Centers. He serves as the Western Division P3 Retail Chair, advocating public-private partnerships, while previously serving as the ICSC Southern California State Director, Program Committee Chair, and Alliance Co-Chair. He holds a bachelor's degree in economics and business from UCLA. Now, Ken is the keynote speaker at the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce Economic Forum, taking place on Wednesday, April 18th, from 10 in the morning to 1 p.m. at the Joslyn Community Center. And this morning, we're going to get a sneak peek at what he'll be focusing on next week. Welcome to the program, Ken. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you so much, Jackie. And for having just met, I'm flattered. You made up a lot of really cool background of mine. I don't know where you got all that, but it sounds very impressive.
It is impressive.
No, I appreciate
Jackie
that.
Jackie is
I appreciate
a very
that
good writer.
Intro. She's a very good writer. Can you send me that, Jackie, so I can add that to my resume?
I will do that.
So, I mean, bottom line, Ken, is that there is nothing more important to the health of a local economy than retail. A lot about the transient occupancy tax. That's a huge one. I mean, cities love that, and hotels, and there's a whole controversy about Airbnb the fact that they don't pay transient occupancy tax in many locales. But retail is critical. Is there any other area of commerce that you think is more important or as important than retail to a local economy?
You know, I really don't think there's anything more important, because at the end of the day, retail is really driven by consumers. And consumers are a subset, if you will, of all the citizens of a community. So, you know, folks have shopped for most of their life, and I think they'll continue to shop going forward. Our economy in the United States, you know, is a consumer-driven and consumer-based economy. So local retail is really a critical component that drives communities. Now, we've been talking about the changing face of retail ever since I've been in the retail business, which has been about 25 years. So what's interesting is today we're also talking about the apocalypse of retail, which I don't buy, because the internet represents only a 9 to 10% component of retail sales. So at the end of the day, retail still is a very local-driven, consumer-driven, experience-driven concept that communities thrive based upon. It's a matter of how it's changing today. I think that's what we can talk about today. How is retail changing?
Hey,
is there a... Yep. Mark?
I was going to say, I thought I read some information, maybe you have it at your fingertips, that these companies that have decided to, rather than just roll over, have decided to attack and evolve into experiential and customer service and all of that type operations. I thought I read where Best Buy, their new CEO, like couple of years ago or 3 years ago, instituted some ideas, and now that company has turned around. That Target had one of the best fourth quarters they've had in a long time, you know, all because they've adopted new strategies. In other words, I think they've been listening to you guys, and they're doing some things.
Yeah, I think at least a couple things are going on with those retailers you mentioned. They're pretty large-scale format retailers, right, from a brick-and-mortar standpoint. So there has been a right-sizing. We've used the term shrinkage a lot. And we've been talking about that for 5 years, 6 years. But we can call it right-sizing. We can call it evolving. You know, I've been in the retail real estate business for all this time. I've done business with grocers that used to be 40,000 feet. Then they grew to 50 to 60,000 square feet. Now they're back down to 25,000 square feet. So the size of the retail box is evolving. And that's what Target's doing. That's what Best Buy is doing. Best Buy's prototype used to be 45,000 feet. It went down to 30, and now they're kiosks in airports. But their footprints,
but also,
as they shrink.
I think I remember the CEO. Didn't the CEO also focus on things internally, like customer service, training his people, creating incentives, but really working on customer service?
Absolutely. So besides that right-sizing of the store, it's how do you serve your consumer? And I think we've talked about this. You need to know at least two things. You need to know your product, and you need to know your customer. So the way you get to know your customer today is through a digital platform. The reality of retail is it's just using technology to advance itself, and that's what a lot of these companies and retailers are doing. They're using the internet. They're using in-store, in-home delivery, last-mile delivery, omni-channeling means by which to reach their consumer and their customer. And that's what Best Buy has done a pretty decent job of. Costco, Target, Walmart, and obviously you have the Amazon effect. That's really caused many of these brick-and-mortar companies to evolve, as we're discussing.
Now, I hear last-mile delivery is a lot. What exactly is that for people who don't know?
Well,
when you say use the term.
Today, we're dividing the world of retail into two broad categories, okay? One is destination retail, and we'll get back to that. Two is what we call the distribution revolution, and that is goods that are more commodity-driven goods are getting to the consumer through this digital platform. Well, how does that good get to the consumer? In the past, you just go to the mall, you'd shop, you'd have a bag of stuff, you'd put it in your trunk, you'd go home. Today, you're doing things online. How does it get to your home? How does it get to the storefront? And it's really through this concept called last mile delivery, the distribution networks and channels of these in big industrial buildings in areas where there's a lot more land have to still get those goods to the infill locations like the Manhattan beaches or the South Bays of the state. So last mile delivery is that distribution channel that gets that product to your home or to a locker where you pick up a good. And so it's the impact of that is on real estate as well. So there's demand for that smaller scale, quasi-retail, quasi-industrial type space.
Right.
I had something in my Happy Friday today that the number one in front of WeWorks, or maybe it was number two. Jackie, you may have seen it. Is either number two or number one behind WeWorks
Amazon. Yeah, Amazon overtook WeWorks as more retail space. That's what it said in your weekend guide. Yeah.
Overtook.
Here's my take on Amazon. Okay, Walmart has had this tremendous footprint of real estate. I believe they're a real estate company. Amazon is beating them and that's the ground game, right? Amazon is beating them in the air game. But Amazon is now becoming basically, if it isn't really to be considered, a real estate company. Their industrial space, their retail footprint.
Whole Foods.
And Whole Foods. So I'm trying to advise our city clients at Cosmont Companies and many of our even developer clients that Amazon is a retailer, and so their signs are going to start to pop up in different places. They're testing these Amazon grocery stores. They bought Whole Foods. They've opened up bookstores. You know, they're basically coming to anywhere USA as a local retailer to serve a consumer.
They're coming.
I try to call them, by the way, you know, to talk to these guys, but I think they want to keep the cards close to their vest.
You know, Ken, several months ago, I read an article a while back. It was probably the end of a quarter or something, where there was a lot of news about a lot of these big companies closing a lot of their stores, Sears and, you know, like Banana Republic, J. Crew's. Mm-hmm. And And then so that was all over the news. And then I read this article about how the writer was explaining how a lot of it is really just when you hear closing 137 stores, you think, oh, things are really bad. But the fact of the matter is, in the South Bay, we have, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 major shopping centers. And there's a Banana Republic in every one of them. We don't need a Banana Republic or a J. Crew in every major shopping center in a 6 or 7 mile radius. So it made me think, like, yeah, they're just slashing the fat. So when people are going on about how retail is dead, I think they're just getting smarter about it. You know, in the old days, anytime a mall opened, you know, there are certain stores that were just in the mall. But as I said, you don't need five of them within a 5 mile radius.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think you've really hit on an important point. That's the headline, unfortunately, that reads retail apocalypse. And it's really not. As I said to you, the industry's been evolving for all the years. Like, the footprints have grown and shrunk. You know, I remember a time where there were like 4 linen stores, and I'm not even a shopper. We managed to buy towels from all 4 of them. Did we really need to go to all 4 of those or not? And we didn't. So guess what happened? You know, it's kind of survival of the fittest. They evolved. Do we need 3 electronic stores to go shop at? No. So now there's 1. How many sporting goods stores or big stores are left? 1. So it's just been a right-sizing.
Yeah, I agree with you with that phrase, survival of the fittest. Absolutely. And I felt that way a long time. Particularly, and I know this sounds awful, but there are a lot of smaller mom and pop shops that, you know, are struggling to stay open. And I'm like, yeah, well, if you're struggling to stay open, you're not doing something right. You have to change the way you work, the way you function. But every so often, locally especially, you'll see something on social media saying, you know, we're going to close our doors unless, you know, we get some support. And that's not, to me, the way to do business.
I think, actually, frankly, the small stores and mom and pops have a real opportunity given this tectonic shift in big box retail. They have a real opportunity to serve that consumer. Mark mentioned the term customer service. I mean, here, you know, real estate has been said in the past to be about location, location, location. Today, maybe retail real estate is about customer service, customer service, customer service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here's a great headline, right? Retail's not dead. Boring retail is dead.
Hmm.
Yep.
So if you're a big box, you're 50,000 feet, you walk in and you can't find a human being, it's a problem.
So are you
small store has that opportunity?
Are you finding the malls that you talk to these days, are they moving away from anchor tenants and going to more boutique, smaller lifestyle, is the common word used, malls?
I think there's 2 components to that. The A location, 100% corner malls are going to do fine. They'll go through their own version of evolution. Some of the B location malls are going to have to go through a total repositioning. In those A location malls, they've still got many of these traditional retailers that we've been talking about, the Victoria's Secrets and some of the fashion retailers. But they are actually evolving as well. They're putting fitness into their malls. They're putting grocery into their malls. They're making sure that they're updated, and that at the end of the day, those malls have to deliver an experience to the customer in order to survive over the long term.
That's a big part of what's going on with the mall. What about the idea of a hotel and movie theater? You know, our mall in Manhattan Beach said they got rid of the movie theater that was there. They didn't want and don't want a hotel there because they said it's not an efficient use of space for them. But I was thinking, man, you put a hotel there, where are people necessities or just a quick area.
Mark, you're going in and out.
Yeah.
Let me try to react to the comment that Mark made, though, about entertainment. And entertainment today is retail. Food today is retail. Place today is retail. So we've been saying a lot about food, dining, entertainment, place are the new anchor tenants. What's entertainment? Entertainment is movie theaters. Entertainment is active uses, you know, fun zones and stuff like that. Entertainment is, you know, experience. So I think the theater business, and you've seen the theater business evolve itself. Let's face it, there used to be boring theater experiences, right? You just walk in, see a movie, and leave and buy it overpriced popcorn. But today, you can have a meal. You can have a cocktail. You can recline. Ooh. You can relax. It's an experience, very different than what it used to be, as you recall.
Yeah.
One of the
new entrants in the theater space in our area is Cinemark, and I have to say, Ken, Cinemark theaters outside the bubble in Playa Vista, those are our go to theaters. We get those reclining lounge chairs, we order, you know, some food and a drink. That's the way to see a movie.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, for instance, Manhattan Village, and I love those guys. You know, I know them all, but it seems to me they're missing the mark a little bit because it seems like the halo effect from a theater, the halo effect from a hotel into your shopping areas, if you have great stores. And you would have that audience built in, a captured audience right there.
Mark, I agree with you. And I think that the hotel business, we started this discussion a little bit about this TOT concept and the hospitality business and the leisure visit. I believe it's a very buoyant part of our economy today. You can see the hotel business and the hotels that have cropped up in the South Bay area. There's a significant number of them. I think they go hand in hand, frankly, with serving the consumer and customer, and back to this concept of experience. Some of these hotels,
right,
like your Shade hotels, are really boutique experiences, which, by the way, you don't even necessarily go to stay overnight. You go there because it's got cool dining, it's a cool environment, it's got a great view. So these are all part of the fabric, I think, that we're discussing. Manhattan Village, you know, is going through a pretty big metamorphosis with a repositioning and redevelopment because it had two Macy's boxes. So the company that's redeveloping that property had to go through a significant entitlement. They're trying to create more of a lifestyle component to it. But, you know, that's going to serve a certain purpose at the end of the day, which is going to be very different than the downtown Manhattan Beach of the world and or, you know, your Sepulveda Boulevard type uses. Those are three distinct type of retail experiences.
Now, Kim,
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
You want me to,
Kim,
go?
I have to ask you. Well, I want to focus on the different areas and get Ken's response to the question: can an experience like a Sepulveda experience survive in this new world order of retail? Because, you know, there's some places like a bar or a restaurant. Well, you'll make special, you know, sort of you'll make special effort to get to, but a retail or I'm thinking of Paws. I'm thinking of that place. Just it's a grooming place for animals. People will make a special effort to get there because they want their dog groomed or they want their, you know, their animal taken care of. But other kinds of retail, how can it survive on a Sepulveda where there's like 50,000 cars a day going by?
The Sepulveda success is going to be just that, a function of that those number of cars that are going by every day. I think that the downtown experience is about walkability and about, you know, an Uber experience or a Lyft experience. Well, you're getting down there, and it's kind of like you have a concierge environment in the downtown. The Sepulvedas of the world are going to serve a purpose with the Costcos and larger footprints and some of those more destination retail service uses, because it's going to be a function of cars. The retail business traditionally has loved traffic. And so that's the benefit of Sepulveda Boulevard.
I think it's going to be design-driven, too. You've got to create a buffer between Sepulveda and the neighborhoods, and you've got to create parking opportunities. And then you will get people into those areas. The other thing, Ken, what is your take on mixed use?
Well, I like to use the term blended use, because I think mixed use has become a little bit of a cliche. And the reason for that is it seems like many jurisdictions have just said, we require mixed use. I think it needs to be more market-driven. And I do think there's a good mix or a blend of those uses where there's residential included with retail, which is sort of more of a community retail, and civic uses and office uses and hospitality uses. I think there is a very good blend. There's no exact formula for it. I think there's a very good opportunity to blend uses to that effect, because I think in the past, things have been, you know, products have been in silos. The power center has been sitting someplace. A downtown's been a downtown. You know, destination box retail has been box retail. But I think now we have an opportunity to really be market-driven in the blending of uses. And that's how I think communities should be thinking of it.
And
well,
you do realize, Ken, you realize that the city of Manhattan Beach has effectively outlawed mixed use.
Well,
they've said no more mixed use in the city of Redondo Beach, which, you know, you're the expert on this. The city is not. You know, they've been going backwards for a while now.
But Jackie, Manhattan Beach, no, we've had four Sepulveda meetings. We've got public comment coming up with two particular dates. I mentioned a little bit about Sepulveda in my Happy Friday today, but they are beginning to reconsider mixed use, absolutely, along Sepulveda.
In Manhattan, what I'm saying is Redondo. There's no more, not allowed anymore.
I thought you said initially Manhattan.
No, not Manhattan.
You used
Redondo.
Both names.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Initially, and then Redondo.
I'm sorry. It's Redondo Beach is no longer allowed.
Yeah, Redondo, and that's why I kind of was talking to Ken about this, because what is the downside if the area is towards mixed use? It's not necessarily a neighborhood. It's like a Sepulveda or a PCH or the Riviera Village and places like that. I mean, why not have mixed use and turn it into a pedestrian community? I mean, that's kind of the Upper West Side in New York or Union Station. I mean, all these different areas. That's kind of what we do.
Let me answer that question by saying that, you know, listen, each city has a politic and a set of policies that are going to drive their opinion with their community input, obviously, as to whether residential is welcomed, whether residential is needed, whether mixed use or blended use is the right solution or formula. But really, it's political will that'll drive and policy that'll drive these decisions. And cities have their own prerogative as to whether what they think is right and wrong. And, you know, it's difficult for us to necessarily call something right or wrong, because there's multiple sides to those opinions.
I was in a meeting yesterday at the city. Here's a hot button. What are you hearing in other areas where you're meeting with balls or city leaders or retail areas, cannabis, the medical marijuana shops, recreational, all of that, and on more of a, you know, Starbucks type of level versus just the guy on the store with the bulletproof, you know, glass window and the security guard. Are you seeing more of that beginning to happen? I heard Beverly Hills has them now. that Aspen just got it. That are you starting to see that beginning to be a retail happening?
Well, what I'm seeing is because we do work in both urban and suburban environments and for communities, and just recently I've been to two pretty suburban, almost rural environments where agriculture is a big part of their industry. Well, for them, a natural conversion from traditional agricultural to cannabis as part mm-hmm. of an economic development effort and a job
right.
creation effort and a revenue generating effort has become an important priority to them. So yes, they have prioritized this industry, which is sort of one of those where if you can't beat them, join them. Again, policy and political will
right.
driven, that a couple of these communities more in the inland part of California have said, we embrace it, we're zoning for it, we're ready for it, we welcome it.
Yeah, Manhattan Beach has, they're not even mincing words. They're are saying maybe, they're saying not on my watch, you know.
Right.
And Jackie, are you hearing anything like in Redondo or Torrance? Or, well, Torrance probably has, but Redondo or Hermosa, are they?
I haven't heard anything about it. I haven't
yeah.
heard anything about it.
I've been approached 3 or 4 times with the chamber, and I know the city's been approached a few times as well. People wanting to set up high-end, either combination of recreational or medical marijuana, MedMen being the new retail, the one that looks like basically the lobby of the Waldorf when you walk in. They were showing, because I took a pitch the other day only because they kept insisting, and finally said, okay, but I tell you, you're not going to get anywhere in this city with it, but I'll listen to your pitch. And man, it was high-end. I mean, pretty wild. But and they just say it's inevitable, you know, that that's going to be a retail opportunity for people. And, of course, we're in Manhattan Beach, the city, they're saying go to Hawthorne or go to Lawndale and open it there and send them there, you know, that sort of thing. So, I'm going to task Joe.
Did we lose Mark
he's
again?
Gonna
all right.
But he's
going to task you, but we don't know what with. let's get back to you know, we've been talking about malls and lifestyle centers and stuff. I can believe it because it's fabulous, but the success of The Point is mm-hmm. just mind blowing. What
right.
they did with creating an interior area as opposed to most shopping centers, you know, you park and then you, on the outside and you go, they've turned it all inward. So there's a huge center court area and they seem to have chosen their retail very specifically, and they have events going on at The Point daily. They have yoga, they have Pilates classes. They do all of these. They have concerts all summer long. And every time I think to go over there, like I want to go to Mendocino Farms to eat lunch or something, I can't find a parking space. It's the place is packed 24/7.
Well, I think the point is that.
Oh, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Hold on, Mark. Hold on, Mark. Mark, hold on. Kim.
I think The Point is today's version of retail real estate, because food is the major component. If you really think about The Point, it's a pretty simple format. It's a nice, open, green environment in the interior,
mm-hmm.
surrounded by, for the most part, food and some retail. And there are many projects that are being modeled, if you will, after that format, because it gets back to the discussion we've been having. Restaurants, quality restaurants, farm-to-table concepts, again, food, which has emerged as today's version of retail, breweries, you know, wine bars, all of that, which are the things we do when we're not on the internet shopping for commodities. So we go to have that experience there. And then the green space that you mentioned, Jackie, activated. And it's activated mm-hmm. for a variety, a diverse set of uses, including family, including exercise, including outdoor fun, again, some outdoor dining. It's a very good model.
And movies. They do movies during the summer. Yeah, they're doing movies during the summer, too. Now, I have to ask you, because as I mentioned earlier, I was at this California Coastal Committee meeting yesterday, and one of the big points that the opponents cite is that they call it a mall by the sea, but what they constantly bring up is that it's going to fail. It's going to fail. The business. First they went on about we don't want 5 Walmarts. They don't know what they're talking about. They keep just mm-hmm. throwing out this vitriol, but that would be an interesting project to work on as far as what types of retail they put in that space. That's what you do. Are you working with them by any chance?
No, we're not working with them.
Could you see that succeeding with the right set of retailers in that space?
In which space are you referring to?
The waterfront project down at Redondo Beach. Yeah.
You know, here's the thing about the California coastline is it's one heck of a draw. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's pristine. The Gold Coast, if you will. I worked on the project down in San Diego, which was at the waterfront, and the opportunity to take advantage of being, close to our California coast is significant. It's a sensitive topic at the end of the day. And, will people come to the coast to have that experience? Yes. Does it have to be done appropriately, thoughtfully? Yes. So there's a lot of politics that are involved in projects like that. And that's part of that sensitivity and part of that challenge. You have the inland part of our state saying, please come. You have the coastal part of our state at times saying, not in my backyard. I want to talk about parking for a second, because we've brought it up and kind of danced around it a little bit. And you mentioned that the point that there's no parking, but really the sharing economy that we live in, which is being driven a lot by the millennial population, the largest population cohort in our country, it's a sharing economy that allows us to jump into an Uber or Lyft or share a ride, I think, to get to these destinations. And I really think that, from a policy perspective, is going to end up changing, where cities start to, and other jurisdictions start to look at the real parking requirement. I have a statistic for you. Average vehicles are used only 4% of the time. They're parked 96% of the time. And mm-hmm. if you really think about that, you say, well, and in my household, I have 3 cars, one for me, one for my wife, one for my daughter. My son turned 14 today. I don't know if he's going to get a car.
Mm.
You know
but
what I mean?
Yeah. Never, you mean.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, well, maybe not
you mean
ever.
Never,
but,
get a car.
Maybe never, but by 2025, they say private car ownership is going to end the way we knew it.
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I've read a ton
expensive.
Of stuff about this. There were already buildings that like parking structures now that can be converted into office buildings or housing later, because between the automated cars and the ride sharing, it's going to completely, and this is going to happen fairly quickly. I believe it's going to happen in the next 10 years. Where we're not going to have the need for all of these parking structures, automated cars will pick you up and drop you off. They don't need to park,
I had a. Well, sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I had a real interesting experience a few weeks ago when Andy Cohen, Andy from Gensler, spoke at our Rotary Club, and I had Rod Spackman from Chevron on one side and Brendan Harrigan from Longo Toyota, general manager, on the other side of me. And Andy's up there talking about the first thing to go will be 2 million truck drivers. They will be replaced by, auto-driven trucks. And Then he said, and then, you know, it'll move into the cars. He goes, and he used his own family as an example. He might, I have two kids in their late 20s. Neither one of them own a car. They Uber, Lyft, mm-hmm. whatever, rideshare, any place they go. You know, you have rideshare motorcycles now, rideshare cars and rideshare bicycles and rideshare every pretty much any mode of transportation now. There are ride-sharing, there are sharing services being set up. He said the gas stations will become green spaces. That's when I felt Rod next to me sort of flex a little bit, you know, because he's Chevron. And now Rod, he said, well, that's only 25% of our business. And I said, Rod, that's still 25% of your business. It's a quarter of your business. And then, but Brendan said, oh, but selling automobiles is not our core business. Servicing automobiles is. So we're already talking to those guys with the automatic driving cars that we'll service those cars. So car dealerships, we evolve more into service-oriented businesses. Now, Andy was very, like you, Jackie, was very aggressive in his timeline, saying same thing, 10 years, you will see the sea change. But to build out that infrastructure has just got to be huge. I mean, just really huge. And even the city now is when we talk about building a parking lot, they're second guessing themselves because they're wondering if that parking lot is going to be obsolete in 10 years. And then the other thing is, and this is what something Andy as an architect brought up, he said, so to your point, Jackie, we are now building parking lots with the idea that later on they will be converted into offices, businesses, anything, retail, whatever. So I thought
the Beach Cities Health District, you know, their healthy living project that they are working on, the garage structure they are going to build so that at a later date it can be converted. It's already happened. It's already, you know, on the board here.
That's what he's saying. That's how we're building, because he builds stuff all over the world. Mm-hmm. All of any parking lot that we build now is built with the idea that it will maybe need to be converted into a workspace.
Yep.
So Mark,
I think that's very cool.
Mark, you made a comment earlier about some design matters, and I think this is right on point. This parking issue, the two key variables going forward will be design and the zoning codes as to what's really required for parking in these 4 per 1,000 ratios, 5 per 1,000 ratios, 10 per 1,000 ratios. And then the design components of parking structures, you know, the dreaded $10 million parking structure is going to end up looking real different in terms of its design with flat floor plates. Gensler is pretty ahead of that curve, and it's really a legitimate discussion as to what's going to happen in the future, not just long-term distant future, but frankly the near future.
I'm interested to know if, you know, I need to remember to ask Phil Friedel over at Manhattan Village and Don Sis if when they're building that big parking structure or that structure they're building, are they thinking in that terms in the design? I've never thought to ask him that.
Hope so.
Yeah. Hey, a few minutes left. Jackie, I want to give a little plug for something, if that's okay. The Economic Forum is coming up next Wednesday, 10 to 1, and our lead-off keynote speaker is Ken. And so if people want to hear and be able to do Q&A with Ken, if they want to be able to see him and talk to him about this on a deeper level and drill down, he's going to be doing what his presentation that he's created called Retail Now. And it's fascinating. You know, it talks about Amazon and the trends and what you need to do and pointing out customer service. And so I think it's going to be a really fantastic open to our economic forum next week. I'm curious, are there any questions you think that Ken should be ready for? Should he be prepared for to be asked? I think parking is definitely one. What do we do about all the cars on the road? Parking, I think that's a big issue. Blended use or mixed use. Is that something he's finding success with around the rest of the country or rest of California? What other questions do you think that these retailers and these business owners and these corporations might ask him?
Bitcoin.
Thank you, Jackie.
Are you going to be able to... Are you going to be able to buy something in a store with Bitcoin? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, but you know what? But Ken, would that even be something you would – I mean, that's not really – what currency you use, whether it's Bitcoin or pesos, that's really not your concern, right?
Yeah, what I want to talk about next week is what I mentioned earlier is this bifurcation of retail into the world of, again, destination, which is these downtown environments and small businesses and places, that juxtaposed to the distribution revolution. And that's what we're talking a lot about these days. It's kind of where retail meets industrial, and we've coined a phrase, redustrial. We were big at Cosmont on creating new words. So blended use, community retail, redustrial is one of the terms we use, because there is this meeting between these two real estate concepts. And then there's this split in this world of retail to these great environments like Manhattan Beach. And then what's going on all this last mile delivery for the distribution revolution.
Right. Wow.
You know, Ken, I don't know. Do you know my husband, John Balestra?
I do. Well, I know of him, and I know he's pretty active in the industrial world. And I'm sure you've learned from him you've experienced with him the changing of industrial. Some of my statistics that I talk about is the demand, the vacancy, and the rental rates for small industrial.
Mm-hmm. Well, my husband is working on a couple of huge industrial projects in LA County and other counties, and every night he comes home and he tells me about what you're talking about, the distribution, the final mile, the last mile. That's what he does. Yeah, from the other end, from the industrial end. Yeah.
I started my career at Trammell Crow Company, Jackie. Mm-hmm. And
there
so I think that's where your husband is. That's where I started my career, to be honest. And you know, from what industrial was then and the criteria and metrics of an industrial building to today is a whole separate and fascinating, which includes automation and robotics and technology and how does it affect the job creation aspect of that, how big are those spaces, meaning, you know, 1 million square feet or 50,000 square feet. So, there's a fascinating world there, but it's merged into the world of retail, to be honest with you.
I get it. Go ahead, Mark.
We only know John as that guy who's Jackie's husband. That's the husband of Jackie Balestra.
Is this the TV story, Jackie, that I heard that you haven't been able to turn your TV on?
Yes, that would be me. Yes, when he gets home, he can turn it on. I still haven't figured out how to turn it on. So that's
technology for you.
Yeah.
Doesn't Jackie Balestra sound like she should be writing romance novels? another romance novel by Jackie Balestra.
I never thought of that. But the other, just one other point I wanted to make about, what I'm trying to remember your phrase, not the death of retail. What were you calling it, Ken?
The apocalypse. You read about it every day. Don't believe it.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it because the new Del Amo Fashion Center, another place. I have to go over there. The place is packed. 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. You can't get a parking space. It's unbelievable. And you know something? There will always be shoppers. There will always be people that like to shop. Shopping. I'm not even talking about all the extra experiences in the stores, but there are people that like to shop. You go out on a weekend, there are whole families that are out at these lifestyle centers. It's never going to go away. So when people scream about retail is dead, and you know, I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second.
Well, guess who's growing in the world of brick and mortar retail? We haven't really talked about it, but your pure play e-commerce companies are maybe 3 to 5% of total retail sales. But the reality of how they're going to be able to grow is to open up storefronts. That's when I said Amazon is really a retailer and a real estate company. Guess who else is still growing? The pharmacies, the grocers. I mean, Manhattan Beach is getting a couple grocers, you know, coming into town. Discount apparel, the TJ Maxx's, the Ross's, the Marshalls of the world, they're growing. The arts and crafts is growing. The Michaels, the Hobby Lobby. I mean, you know, there are still retailers that are actually growing. I think net-net, the square footage of new retail is going to be positive, not negative, at the end of the day. There's not an apocalypse. There's just an evolution.
Yep.
I think absolutely. When you see all this downside, when you hear about downsizing, I think to Jackie's point and to your point, Ken, earlier, in that people went from 20 to 40 to 60,000 square feet, and then they downsized to 40, and now they're back to 20 because they're beginning to work smarter and be more efficient. And it isn't just the U.S. the most real estate wins. That isn't the case. It's working for location, customer service, benefits, experience, and finding those places where you can make that happen.
So, Mark, something next week that I'll share, you know, and I'll share it now with the audience at the Economic Forum is, you know, we talked about customer service for how small brick and mortar or brick and mortar companies stay in business. We've talked about experience. So you need customer service and experience. And then there's another concept, which is authenticity. As I said, you know, boring retail's dead, but authentic retail is alive.
Yep.
Right.
That's a great way to
put it.
No boring retail.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's a bumper sticker or a hashtag, Joe.
What if a retail group like the Downtown Business Association or the city of Hawthorne or city of Redondo, or you probably know all these guys anyway, but how do they get a hold of you? Who do they call if there's, for you to come and make a presentation to them, to get them to think and work smarter?
Yeah, so Cosmont Companies, and our office is in Manhattan Beach. We work a little virtually, so I'm here in Orange County. But if you reach out to Cosmont through the website, you can find any of us. You can find me that way. I have a cell phone number and an email, and I kind of work around the clock.
Listen, guys, I want to tell you guys a great little story, you know, about a small retail business. Last month, I was at a USBA mixer, and I met a young woman. You know, you meet all these different people at the mixers, and I said, "What do you do?" And she said, "Well, my parents had a rug store, you know, like nice rugs, Persian rugs, Oriental rugs, for 40 years. They had a little shop front for 40 years, and they decided they were going to retire. And they have two daughters, Norelle and Devorah, and the daughters decided they wanted to take it over and rebrand it. And which is what they did. It's now called Pull and Thread. And she, when I met her at this mixer, she had such great energy. And she was talking about community collaborations and creating connections. And so she told me, she gave me her card and she said, "Oh, I'm going to be having a mixer in a couple of weeks." And so I went to it. And she's doing it. She's taking something her parents did for 40 years and she's turning it around and upside down and rebranding. And I went to her mixer the other night, and she had brought in, I don't know, 6 or 8 other local businesses to showcase what their merchandise. And I believe she's going to make it. You know, that she's making it an experience, and that's a good example, I think, of what you're talking about, Ken. Yes?
Yes, absolutely. So that branding, that imaging, that marketing – that authenticity that we talked about, those are ingredients for success. And then, you know, as Mark and I have discussed, provide something special for your consumer. Provide the experience, provide the product knowledge, provide the understanding of their tastes and likes. You know, I have a local wine store that I go to. They know exactly what I like. It's 1,500 square
feet. That's important.
It's 1,500 square feet. I could buy wine online. I don't.
Yep.
One last question from me, Ken. What do you recommend that stores in like close proximity work together, or is it really end up being what that store can do on their own, or do they really need all everybody to work together and pulling in the same direction, sort of thing?
I think working together is a good thing. It's not a competitive component to the success. I think it's a synergistic component to success. That's how retail's been defined really through its history, is synergy, complementary aspects to different retailers. And they can do that through, you know, organizations or marketing groups or the city or bids or PBIDs. There's ways to collaborate. It's important.
I love it. Okay, listen, we got to wrap this up. I want to mention it one more time. Ken is going to be the keynote speaker at the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce Economic Forum taking place next Wednesday, April 18th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Joslyn Community Center. Mark, are tickets still available? I believe they're $25 for members, $35 for non-members.
And it includes lunch. It's a lot of information packed into 3 hours. I mean, you are going to learn everything about retail and the trends and what you need to be doing to survive from Ken. You're going to be learning desktop yoga. You're going to be learning Instagram for badasses. You're going to be learning how to combat Amazon. You're going to be learning courteous and cool, which is business etiquette, things that you think that you're doing may not be a good way for you to or things like that.
All right. Take us home, Joe.
Been a pleasure, and Jackie and Mark. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you,
ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Ken Hira, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And, of course, Mark Lips, and he's now dropped off because he's in Coachella. And he's got the escape pod. Mark and a bunch of his buddies with the escape pod are in Coachella and are going to have a fantastic weekend. We wish him all the best, and we wish him the best of times. And, of course, thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Jackie, I have to say at the end of the show, I have to say, before the show, we were talking with Ken, and he was, you know, he chuckled when we said, this is an exciting topic, and this is going to be fun. And he kind of chuckled, I think, because he thought, well, this is so, you know, inside baseball. But it could not be more fascinating for a business owner to talk about retail and how retail is changing. Isn't it fascinating?
I find it fascinating. And we're very fortunate because we've been doing this show for so long, and we get so many smart inside people, you know, on all these various topics. And it's, I learn something new every single week on this show. Very fascinating.
I think people all over the country in local retail environments could learn so much from this show, and sharing this show with their friends and neighbors and coworkers could spark discussions that could really change how they do business and improve their businesses. And so certainly here in Southern California, we're very lucky. We're going to have Ken and at the Economic Forum here in Manhattan Beach. If you need more information, just go to manhattanbeachchamber.com. And people should come from all over to attend that, because Ken is the guy. Ken Hira, Cosmont. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ken. We'll see you. We'll see you soon. We'll see everybody soon. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.